All right, this is Pure Decking, show number 330 for December 13th, 2018. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and misquoting internet memes. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Bullet Bourbon.
Good call. And we have RU. RU, I'm afraid to ask.
Tears of a cloud today. I'm drinking.
Tears of a cloud. That works.
Yeah. Yep. What are you drinking, Morps?
I am drinking the last of my Devil's Cut, Jim Beam Devil's Cut.
You realize that you've been on the last of something for the last 2 months? So you're
so
slamming a bottle a week at this point.
I probably need to cut back.
I didn't mean to drink shame you.
It's getting expensive.
I mean, at least you're not pickling yourself on cheap shit. That's all I can say.
Well, the Jim Beam's on the cheaper side. I mean, it's not like Heaven's Hill. I can't drink that stuff.
Speaking of drinking, this time last year, I made the bold statement that YouTube would be irrelevant.
It's on its way.
It's on its way, but I thought we'd fucking see it gone by now. I really did. So on that prediction, I have to walk it back. But there has been some significant developments with YouTube this year.
Well, they're
absolutely massive things, actually, when you think about it. It's been a huge year if you've been making your money out of doing this sort of stuff.
Well, because they, of course, they redid all their stuff, but... there were a couple of different articles on it. I didn't think it was show worthy, but apparently they've had a couple of major channels go bankrupt. Not channels, the partner networks.
Yeah,
they had those go bankrupt, and then several of the more well known channels have shut down. So
yeah, it's having a rough time, and there's finally some new players in town.
Yeah,
so. Next year will be an interesting one, as I know six of the biggest YouTubers over there for the kind of stuff I like to be into are all moving. They're gone. They saw the writing on the wall.
Oh, that
Some
reminds
got pushed,
me. I did
others
look.
Others jumped.
I did look. It does have an API. So the whole...
Awesome.
Some of the stuff we were talking about, totally plausible.
Well, we got some interesting stuff coming out next year, Psychros. Bit of a change. May not like it, but some things may change. Some may stay the same. But we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, G15's not going anywhere.
No, it's not. It's always going to be here. But we're going to try some new projects next year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got a couple lined up. So a different name, completely different other stuff, not even related to G15. So it's... Well, kind of. I mean, it's not completely disconnected because, you know, it's still me. I want to put it under a different project name just to avoid confusion.
And also, too, it's a whole different medium.
Well, and it's...
So that's going to be interesting to fuck around with.
And by the way, when I say confusion, I mean my confusion. I don't. It's like, what'd you do? Started using the wrong handle on the wrong system. Fuck!
I told you to hold the knife handle first. That's the way it's going to feel for me being over there. And it's all new. I'm actually going to have to put effort in.
That reminds me. I should mention, this is, you know, even though I say G15 is not going anywhere, we are going on hiatus for Christmas and New Year's. So this is going to be the last show of 2018, and we should be back, I'm thinking, the first week of January.
Yeah, something like that. I'll attempt to be back anyway. I don't think I'm going anywhere over the new year. I'm just getting drunk with you guys and playing games.
Well, we might get drunk and hop on the stream for New Year's. I mean, I don't know. But I'm not promising that. But next week, next week and the week of Christmas, definitely no show.
Definitely no show, yeah.
So, at least not decking. I mean, I can't speak for somebody else hopping on the stream, and if we can convince, you know, Suave to do a get himself some news stories together.
If I can get a newsreader, I'll do a pure. I'll do a IGN. If I can get someone to read the news, I will do an impromptu IGN.
If you do pure decking, I'll do IGN. It's fine.
You've sat in the host chair for IHN. It's a usually with a sticky coating.
Yeah. So, anyways.
All right. I managed to do an intro for us. There we go.
Yeah, we got an intro. We killed 6 minutes. Hey, we're doing great.
There you go.
So just to kind of wrap up some discussion from last week, we were drunkenly laughing at Linux.org getting defaced, and I was about reading the doxing out on air until I realized what I was doing. But anyways, so they actually did some posts a couple of different places. I saw it on Reddit, and I think it went up on Hacker News as well. But they explained what had happened was that it wasn't even their servers at all. It was their DNS provider. Somebody managed to get into their DNS provider and point it at their cloud system. Fuck, I forget what that service is called now. Their CDN. Fuck. The one that does it for free. Cloudflare? Yeah, I think it's Cloudflare. So they got into their DNS and pointed it at the website with all the doxing info on it. And even in the most obnoxious thing about it, because they were fully explaining it, yeah, somebody got in and pointed our DNS at the wrong server. Perfect sense, explains exactly what happened. And they even said in the post I saw that, yes, we know we should have had MFA on this. We didn't. We're fixing it. So, and, you know, as somebody who does this stuff on a regular basis, it is hard to get organizations, even organizations that you would think would know better, like the Linux Foundation, to do MFA, to do proper account management, to do proper change management. It is a fucking nightmare. Because you're going to have people who's like, oh man, that's hard. Let's just not do it. And or they won't want to spend the money on it, or they won't understand why it's important. And especially if the leadership doesn't see the point, it gets very, very difficult to get change done. This is one of the reasons why third-party pen test companies still get a paycheck, because it's not like most IT people working for the companies don't know where all these holes are. They can't get management to listen to them until they, you know, somebody, a regulator comes in and says, you have to spend X, get an external pen test, and show us the reports. So, yeah, it's frustrating as hell. But so the Linux.org servers themselves were fine. They were never touched. It was just purely the addressing was changed, which, well, let's just say I went and added multi-factor to my own DNS host at that point, so it's like, oh yeah, that's a good idea, I should do that. But, you know, I mean, hell, I do this stuff, and I'd forgotten to set it up on some of my own crap, right? So, and plus, too, if you are running a modern set of websites and have, you know, you've got all these different, you know, like, social accounts and emails and everything else, yeah, it's easy to forget about one or two of them. Like, you know, the stuff I use to run Galaxy 15 is spread out across 6 different service providers, now that I think about it. Yeah, you know, the one you don't have to log into all that often, but once a year to do the renewals, is pretty easy to forget about doing the MFA on. So,
yeah, you get complacent.
Absolutely.
It happens.
Absolutely. So, but
and do you think Linux.org might have just thought, we're offering a free service, nobody's going to attack us, we're the nice guys?
Well, I doubt anybody had really gone after them before either. It was, I mean, generally that kind of political hacking, so websites get defaced for a couple of different reasons, but there's either somebody thinks they have a reason to do it, right? So in this case, they didn't like the code of conduct, so they were doxing the person they got the code of conduct from, which that person's not even related to Linux. They just happened to write an open source code of conduct, and that's what the Linux Foundation picked up and started using, right? So somebody just suggested, here's one, let's use this. And, you know, I'm sure there's all kinds of debate and everything else. So I'm not going to say it wasn't just like, you know, hey, grab it and use this one, but I can paraphrase. But, you know, if you're not a big enough target for anybody to care about, and you haven't pissed anybody off, and you don't have any obvious security holes for a bot to exploit, eh, it's probably not really that much going to happen with your website, right? But if you've given somebody the reason, and it could be something as dumb as saying, well, nobody's going to go after me. They don't have a reason to do it. Well, you know, somebody's going to decide to prove me wrong on that, and now they're going to go after the websites, right? So I'm not saying it has to be a good reason. But if there's not something that a bot's going to automatically exploit, which, by the way, those are still running around quite often. And if you're not certain about that, throw up a packet capture and look at anything hitting a public IP. You're going to see an amazing amount of SSH login attempts, RDP login attempts, people trying to hit you with SMB shit, Telnet. I mean, you're going to see bots galore trying to log into any system with a public IP just constantly. So, you know, run fail demand on any firewall you can, because it's going to just save you the headache. But, so there's all these automated systems constantly just trying to guess passwords, get into things, and looking for known exploits. So if you don't patch your system, even if you're a little nobody target, you're going to get hacked. But if you're a big system and you're doing your proper maintenance, or you have, you know, your system is obscure enough and well set up enough that you're not going to be, you know, beaten up by a bot, at that point it's somebody deciding to take a concerted effort to get into your systems. And today it's pretty good chance that if somebody's putting in the effort, they're going to get in, ultimately. They'll find, you know, something you have. You know, and, of course, it depends on how much effort somebody's wanting to put into this. But, you know, they might find a hole that you've missed, or maybe something that hasn't been patched in some software you're using, a known exploit that hasn't been fixed, or maybe they've got some pocket O-Day that hasn't been released, or it's only been released in, like, a few places, and so they happen to have that, and it hasn't been fixed yet. Or they have, you know, they'll resort to trying to fish credentials, especially if you're an organization. And, you know, we were just talking about how it's hard to get organizations to do security properly, so they'll resort to phishing, or, you know, it's not unheard of that, you know, we did the article on Decking a couple of years ago that somebody who had a super short Twitter handle had a few other of his systems hacked, like some web servers and things like that, that weren't even related to the Twitter handle, because somebody wanted that Twitter handle to the point that they were holding his other stuff for ransom trying to get it.
I remember that guy, yeah.
Yeah. He ended up giving them the handle, getting his stuff back, fixing all of his security issues, and then immediately contacting Twitter and saying, help. But, and I don't blame him. I mean, you know.
Neither do I.
But, yeah, I don't. So, like, if somebody really, really wants to take the time to get into G15, it'll probably happen, you know? I've done an okay job of setting all this stuff up, but I'm doing it on the side. It's not like I'm monitoring the thing 24/7. Usually it's RU that's monitoring it 24/7.
And I've got all the ability to just go, hey, Morps, help.
Oh, there's been more than one instance where I've gotten home, I've had an absolute fucked up day. I get on TeamSpeak expecting to start ranting, and RU's like, yeah, about that.
You got to fix this first.
So, you know, I mean, and there's always ways in. So I'm obviously never going to claim my shit's perfect. I know better. But
and if anybody does, they're crazy, because it only takes one mistake.
Yeah. That's absolutely right.
Look how many people are involved over there. There's more than one person running that website.
Oh yeah.
And so that could also give them a bit of the vulnerability.
That too.
A lot of times insiders, the one they're facing websites, like, you didn't pay your developer. That wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, we've done that story a couple of times too. So yep. You know, I just when somebody's made an honest, you know, mistake like that and their system's got popped, okay. You know, you can give them a little bit of ribbing for it. And that was the thing, was they even said in their post, yes, we should have been using MFA. We know, we're idiots, we're sorry. And then every other post in there was, why weren't you using MFA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We touched on that. the previous statement. Thank you.
It's just like, and of course, this is the exact same reaction. By the way, I've been in these conversations where a system got popped because somebody refused to patch it, and usually they're... I'm trying to think how to tell this story. It's been a few years. Okay, so I used to work at a company that ran some Java server-side stuff, and they had basically refused... They put some serious effort. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anybody put this kind of effort into just not patching their software. Like, they were rewriting Java libraries and shit so they didn't have to upgrade Java. What the fuck? It's like, just...
At that point, is it easier to update Java?
That's kind of what I thought, but no, apparently not. It's just like, what the hell? But anyways, yeah, I'd never seen a company put in so much effort to not update Java. Anyways, so they had a server get hacked. It wasn't a bad hack. Nothing really came of it. They just, you know, somebody got a shell in the box, didn't know what they were doing, crashed it. When we figured it out, they had basically gotten into the box, couldn't figure out how to get out of the network, and just crashed the box, and that was the end of it. So you might say no harm, no foul, except somebody popped the fucking box, right?
Yeah.
So then I'm sitting there explaining to the same manager who was like, we can't update Java. We can never update Java. My God, it's like our sacred, it's an idol, man. You have to worship this particular version of Java. It's like you're running 7-year-old JBoss servers, dude. What the fuck?
Your idol attempted to rape the company, sir. Maybe we should burn it down.
Oh, no. Because I was on the security team. He wanted to know how we let this happen.
We didn't let this happen, sir. I explained to you that this is a steaming pile of shit.
See, here's the email where I called
it. Hurt.
This is the email where we called out the risk. I didn't let this happen. You let this happen. I don't work at that company anymore. Yeah, but that's the kind of petty bullshit that happens, right? It's like, you know, somebody who doesn't understand it, doesn't know what's going on, they're the ones wanting to know why you let this happen. Well, they're the ones that usually are the ones that caused it. So I don't really hold it against the Linux guys to have this happen. The Linux Foundation, I should say. So, I don't know. We made fun of their code of conduct, too. So it's like, whatever.
But, yeah. And the whole, they don't have a role on that one. They voted to adopt it. If you're going to put that up with your name on it, you should read it and know what you're subscribing to. Now, that doesn't give anyone the right to fuck with your shit, but yeah, they were in on the code of conduct.
Yeah, so I'm not... I mean, I take issue with it as well, because the language of the code of conduct has some things in it that are kind of activist, which I don't think is the right... I don't think a code of conduct is the right place to do that kind of activism, especially because the way that kind of activism generally goes, especially with the way, you know, internet archiving works, if you ever, once ever, made a misstatement that could have been interpreted as seriously being racist, sexist, bigot, homophobe, whatever, you know...
You won't be able to host the Emmys?
Yeah, that's where I was
going.
Get
around that, Wolves. Is just don't give a fuck.
That's true.
Don't apologize. Walk away.
That's
true. Don't even engage.
Well, that's true. But when you have these organizations that take these kind of things seriously, like what Linux is doing with this code of conduct, or at least the person who wrote the code of conduct interprets it that way, where somebody once posted something racist 12 years ago on fucking LiveJournal, they shouldn't be allowed to have a job today, you know? So... I don't know. I think that stuff's way blown out of proportion, and I understand why people are upset about that as well. So, I don't know. But it was a DNS hijack, and they fully explained and admitted what had happened, and I believe it's been cleaned up by now. So, anyways.
Yeah.
Good news. The code is as good as it was before.
Well, I mean, still, they said somebody got into an account on the DNS. You know, it doesn't matter what OS you're running. If somebody's guessing your password, you're still fucked. But anyways, let's move on here. First story I have is from the Vancouver Sun. Qualcomm Incorporated on Monday said it had won a preliminary order from a Chinese court banning the importation and sale of several Apple Inc. iPhone models in China that the court found violated two of Qualcomm patents. The preliminary order affects the iPhone 6S through the iPhone X. The ruling came from the Fuzhou Intermediate People's Court in China, the same court that earlier this year banned the import of some memory chip maker Micron Technology Inc.'s chip into China. Qualcomm initially filed the case in China in late 2017. The court found Apple violated two of Qualcomm's software patents around resizing photographs and managing applications on a touchscreen. Apple continues to benefit from our intellectual property while refusing to compensate us. Don Rosenberg, general counsel of Qualcomm, said in a statement, because the patents concern software, Apple could make changes to its software and avoid the patents and still be able to sell its phones. The patents in the suit, which Qualcomm said on Monday had been upheld by the Chinese patent office, are separate from those being contested in other cases in its wide-ranging legal dispute with Apple. Qualcomm has also asked regulators in the United States to ban the importation of several iPhone models over patent concerns, but U.S. officials so far have declined to do so. The specific iPhone models affected by the preliminary ruling in China are the iPhone 6S, the iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus, iPhone 8, iPhone 8 Plus, and the iPhone X, or iPhone 10. I forget which one that is now. Because when you're talking about Mac OS, it was always supposed to be OS 10, but they spelled it OS X. And on the iPhone, they skipped 9 if it's iPhone 10. But if it's just iPhone X, I guess that's just to sound extreme and Mountain Dewy.
Yeah.
But I get China upholding intellectual property. The fuck?
Yeah.
Kind of.
They're
upholding it for their company. Possibly for me, but not for thee kind of thing. Although, if Apple's fucking around, they should be penalized. It's just, I already know, China doesn't hold up our shit.
I was going to say, China's the king of the third shift.
And not only do they not abide by our copyrights, they're kind of like, if you want to do business in our country, you're going to partner with one of our companies, and they're going to see your intellectual property. Oh, wait a minute, now you can't operate in our country anymore. Get the fuck out. And look, we have this new company spinning up. Guess what they're making? Whatever you were making.
Wait, because iCar says a point. I thought Qualcomm was Korean.
Double check the story, because according to that, it sounded like they were Chinese. Now, they could be a Korean company suing in a Chinese court.
Qualcomm. Just Google it real quick. Qualcomm Incorporated is an American multinational semiconductor and telecommunications equipment company. Okay, Wikipedia says they're American.
Wow.
The parent company is Qualcomm Incorporated, which includes Qualcomm Licensing Division, Qualcomm's wholly owned subsidiary, Qualcomm Technologies, operates as, created on July 1st, 1985 by former Linkabit employee Erwin Jacobs, Quality Communications. Huh. Okay. I was thinking they were Korean for some reason.
Huh. I was thinking not American.
No, so China upholding... Of course, China hates Apple, just flat out. They hate Apple. We know that their government does, so maybe it was just the chance to stick it to Apple.
Ooh.
Yeah, but that could be it.
This means they filed patents in multiple countries. I wonder how that works when it comes to patent law.
You probably have to get a patent lawyer for each country you're doing it in to keep up with the laws.
I guess that's a way of avoiding whether or not they're going to uphold another country's patent. I'll just patent it everywhere, and then it doesn't matter whether a country recognizes another country's patent.
Yeah.
It's patented in that country as well.
So, all right. Well, next article is from thesun.co.uk, and this was sent to me by Foxwea RU. So RU sent me the link, but he said it came from Fox. And again, it's China. A Chinese factory worker has survived being skewered with 10 metal spikes when a robot malfunctioned. It's the start of the uprising.
Malfunctioned. Malfunctioned, air quotes.
The picture is gruesome because it shows the dude was still, I guess, still has, I don't know where the others are. You see six in the picture and his hands all bandaged up, so maybe they've already removed some at this point. But, I mean, all six, from the way his arm's sitting, you can see the spikes on the other side. So those are all the way through.
Yeah, like the robot did not malfunction. That's intentional.
Yeah, it's like when you stab somebody 46 times and then tell people it's an accident. So,
yeah.
The 49-year-old, named as Mr. Zhao, was working on the night shift at a porcelain factory in Hunan province when he was struck by a falling robotic arm. Robotic arm in a porcelain factory. The accident resulted in him being impaled with foot-long, half-inch-thick metal rods. Those don't look like part of a robot. Those look like a weapon. Those look like throwing darts, man. The pictures here of these things are gruesome. It's a spike with a rib in it, and then a long part, and then what appears to be a part like a set screw. So, the accident resulted in him being impaled with foot-long, half-inch-thick metal rods. He was first taken to a local hospital before he was transferred to the Zhangjia Hospital of South Central University due to the severity of his injuries. Six steel rods fixed on a steel plate. Fuck, so they just had a plate of spikes attached to a robot. What the fuck was this porcelain factory doing? On a steel plate, shattered his right shoulder and chest, or pierced his right shoulder and chest, and four penetrated elsewhere in his body. During the operation, doctors found that one of the rods missed an artery by 0.1 millimeters. Damn.
Wow.
Damn.
Sir, good news. You're alive. Bad news. You used up all your luck. You will never hit the lottery.
And the worst part about it, they probably want him back at work tomorrow. This is China, after all.
Yeah. The rods also prevented the doctors from carrying out x-rays before the operation. They were relatively big, so there was no means of getting fitting. Okay. The patient into the x-ray machine, while the nails themselves could have caused interference with the x-rays, said Wu Pinfang, an associate professor of hand microsurgery. Surgeons worked throughout the night to take out all the rods in Mr. Zhao's bodies. His condition is now described as stable, and he will undergo treatment and physiotherapy to assist in his recovery, and he is already able to move his right arm. Mr. Zhao was lucky not to suffer the same fate as an American factory worker, Wanda Holbrook. The maintenance technician was killed by a rogue robot who had veered into the area she was working in and crushed her head. Fuck. They're going for the older ones too. The 57-year-old was inspecting machinery in an area where components were assembled when the robot took Wanda by surprise, entering the section she was working in. Court documents said at the time. It sounds like
took
a murder
her by
story.
Surprise.
In 2015,
either
another,
that or a love interest.
Whoa, hello. In 2015, another car industry worker, this time in Germany, was also killed by a robot. The unnamed 22-year-old man was part of a team that was setting up stationary robot at Volkswagen plant when it grabbed and crushed him against a metal plate. Last year, a construction worker miraculously survived after he was electrocuted, thrown from his workstation, and then impaled through the anus by a 4-foot steel bar.
Oh, wow.
Tell me, sir, that you love me. Tell me.
Yang Ming, 37, had accidentally touched live wires on a building site, and the shock sent him flying backwards into the protruding metal rod. Well, now wait. That one's not necessarily a robot attack. Why is that in the story?
That sounds like a cartoon accident.
Rescuers left the pole inside and rushed him to the hospital so surgeons could fish it out. Really, people? Is that's how you're writing that up? So... Meng had to undergo 7 hours of surgery at the Sichuan University West China Hospital in Chengdu, capital of China's southwestern Sichuan province. I'm probably saying those names wrong. But
I think it may be Sichuan, like a chicken.
Sure, why not? I don't know why that last one was in there. That wasn't a robot attack. That was just like a Mel Brooks comedy. But, yeah. I mean, the picture of this poor guy, it's just gruesome. And it's like, what the hell in a porcelain factory calls for plates of spikes like a fucking portal trap?
I have no idea.
It's like we were using the robots to recreate a Sonic the Hedgehog level. And the fuck, man?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I didn't see it till just now when we were talking about the guy getting, you know, the rod up his butt. It's like Russ put hashtag me too.
Workplace sexual advances.
Robotic quality sexual work. Advances. Oh, man. Next one's from The Verge, and it's purely to make fun of people who go to Taylor Swift concerts. Taylor Swift tracked stalkers with face recognition tech at her concert. Taylor Swift held a concert at California's Rose Bowl this past May that was monitored by a facial recognition system. The system's target, hundreds of Swift's stalkers. Swift's, well, you know, young girl, I can see why she's got stalkers. Famous people usually get those.
Isn't she in her 50s now?
Taylor Swift? I thought she was still in her 20s.
I don't know. She's been around forever.
Well, she started young. Let's see. Taylor Swift. Is there not a Wikipedia? Here we go. She was born 1989. She's 29 years old.
Okay. Nearly past her prime.
Oh. Every time I go to Wikipedia, way, no, it's bugging me to donate to them as much as I'm hitting them this show.
All this story is to ease us into it. This is just normalizing.
Yeah.
That's all this story is. It's got nothing to do with her stalkers. They couldn't give two fucks if she got gang fucked by a heap of stalkers. They're just needing an excuse to roll out this without everybody going, "You're fucking doing what?"
Yeah, I could see that. Swift's facial recognition system was built into a kiosk that displayed highlights of her rehearsals, which would secretly record onlookers' faces, according to the Rolling Stone, which spoke with concert security expert who observed the kiosk. Attendees who looked at the kiosk were immediately scanned. We see you're looking at the heads. Afterwards, the data was sent to a command post in Nashville, Tennessee, that attempted to match hundreds of images to a database of her known stalkers. What, do they have, like, their Facebook profiles? They probably have their Facebook profiles.
They probably have their mug shots.
U.S. artists haven't previously been publicized for using facial recognition tech at their concerts. However, the legality of doing so is on the artist's side. A concert is technically a private event. Therefore, event organizers can subject concert goers to almost any kind of surveillance. The security measures taken for Swift's event could be considered extreme. But it's not the first time facial recognition has been used to look out for unwanted attendees. This past April, Chinese police arrested a 31-year-old suspect who was hiding among nearly 60,000 people during a concert at the Qing International Sports Center. This was made possible by the early stages of China's own Zulang, or Sharp Eyes, monitoring system, which will be tasked with monitoring movements of its citizens. Ed 209, version 0.001. Back in the U.S., advancements...
Don't
also
point a gun at it.
Back in the U.S., advancements are also being made with facial recognition technology in big crowds. For example, Ticketmaster envisions replacing tickets with a facial scan that is tied to your seat and is further developing the tech. While you might not be scanned going to see the next Marvel film, the movie ticket of the future might be your face. So what happens when you have people who are like doing the Kiss makeup because they want to go to a Kiss concert?
It bypasses all that. It goes by nine different points, I think, on the face.
I thought there was some makeup
you could... bone structure.
I thought there was makeup people were figuring out to do that would, like, fuck up the facial recognition stuff.
Oh, you've already forgot the story about how programmers are sexist. We've already got a nice Asian gentleman who has wrote a program to bypass that. You can look at women without their makeup now. snap a photo, and we'll strip that shit away.
Well, Cycros thinks it's because of anybody who looked at a deep fake of Taylor Swift, so.
Is a deep fake of Taylor Swift?
Probably. It's the internet, dude. There's deep fakes of everybody. I mean, there was a deep fake of Trump and Merkel, for God's sake. Although I think it was just a speech.
I want to throw up a bit.
It was just a speech. It wasn't actually that.
Oh, okay.
I think I just made everybody lose their lunch.
I'll take that bet. I bet there's a deep fake of the other two. Are you? Prove me correct. I'm not
Get fucking madman.
Oh, no. I've misunderstood him. Deep fakes of the stalkers fucking Taylor Swift. Wow. Okay. Huh. I'm probably getting on a list for saying that one out loud. And yes, there are a few. Okay, well. Probably. The internet's a weird place. World's getting weird, man. The world's fucking getting weird. Why do you think we do this show?
Used to be the internet was weird. Now it's the fucking world.
The internet spilled out into the world. Down. Suddenly 4chan is the voice of reason. What's going on?
Exactly.
I want to weep.
It's like you know, when 4chan becomes the voice of reason, that's just like, what?
I've had enough internet for this century. Time to go.
Well, I'll be in a cabin in the woods. Polishing my shotgun and being all kinds of happy. Anyways, next article is from the BBC, and RU did actually send me this one. Robot turns out to be a man in a suit. A robot on show at a Russian state-sponsored event has turned out to be a man dressed in a costume. Robot Boris featured on Russian TV and was apparently able to walk, talk, and dance. But soon after its appearance, journalists began to question the bot's authenticity. In a picture published afterward on social media, the neck of a person was clearly visible. Well, how do you know that robot didn't just kidnap somebody and steal their skin? I've played Borderlands 2. There's a robot that does that. He has you go murder psychos.
Robot that hires you do that.
Well, yeah, but yeah, he has you go murder psychos for clothing and body parts. Anyways, the robot is in fact a 250,000 ruble or about 3,000 pound costume called Ayosha the Robot, made by a company called Show Robots. While the organizers of the Proyetroya Technology Forum, which was aimed at youngsters, had not claimed the robot was real, the TV coverage on Russia 24 suggested it was. Russian website T-Journal raised concerns about the robot, asking a series of questions. Why did the robot feature no sensors? How did Russian scientists get the robot made so quickly with no papers published about it? Why had there been no internet coverage of such an advanced robot? Why did the robot make so many unnecessary movements during its dancing? Well, the hip thrusting and the grinding on that poor girl. Why did it look like a man would fit perfectly inside it?
Why did it want a cheeseburger?
All these questions and more.
Why did it take its head off and have lunch? I mean, why only offer a pre-recording of its voice?
Why did it need to scratch its groin?
Did it fart? We thought we heard the robot fart.
So why does the robot keep cupping itself?
On the website of the firm behind the Alyosha robot costume, the product is described as being able to create an almost complete illusion that you have a real robot. So here's the question, and this is the reason I wanted to talk about this, besides it just being hilarious, because everybody's shocked that the robot was a dude in a costume. About 10 years ago, if you had a robot walking around at a kids' event, nobody would have questioned that it was a dude in a costume, right?
Yeah.
So
I see where you're going.
And the forum where this was at, which was aimed at children, never claimed they had a real robot. I mean, this is be like Disneyland say, what? You mean that's not an actual giant mouse in a tuxedo running around Disneyland? Shocked. I am shocked, sir. You mean that's a failed art major in a costume? No.
Art major.
I'll have you know that he got his bachelor's degree. You just shouldn't have gotten it in feminist studies.
Yeah, should have gone with lesbian dance theory. Much more employment opportunities with that.
Yeah, he'd be in the conga line with that one.
So here's the thing.
Not on the mouse.
So the organization aimed at children never claimed the robot was real, but TV coverage suggested it was. I mean, this is the Russian news media thought they had a real robot at this thing, said it was real, and now they're attacking the organization trying to do a science fair for kids. Because, Well, how do you not have a real robot? Well, who said it was real? The TV said it was real. Well, we never claimed it was real. Well, the TV said it. How dare you? I mean, this is bullshit. Is what this is.
It's essentially like when that dude made the gif of CNN getting the shit kicked out of it by Trump.
Right? Yeah.
It was just a gif, right?
Just somebody having fun.
And they're like, no, you can't do violence without fucking logo. We're going to dox the shit out of you. Release your name unless you take that down. Like, it's like, you embarrassed us. Now we must discredit you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's like, this article is written with this, you know, pearl clutching, I need the vapors shock that it's a dude in a costume. I mean,
and they get all pissy when they fuck up.
Again, did this guy never go to Disneyland? I guarantee you, Goofy wasn't a cartoon character. It was a meth addict in a mask.
And that makes the rape even more scary.
Oh, dude. It's Goofy time. God damn.
Yeah. I saw that yesterday floating around. I was like, I haven't seen that in ages. No, don't want to see that.
I'm glad I wasn't watching the same Goofy cartoon you were. I was watching Goof Troop. And no, don't go there. It was just a family show.
We're going to leave it at that. You obviously never saw the movies.
Good.
Let's all right. Let's go to the ZDNet article. It's basically water is wet. Over 40,000 credentials for government portals have been found online. Malware. no shit.
And next in weather and sport,
malware operators have collected login credentials for government portals in Italy, Saudi Arabia, Portugal, Bulgaria, Romania, and more.
Dude, we might be able to find out where all the pieces of the body are buried.
A Russian cybersecurity firm says it discovered login credentials for more than 40,000 accounts on government portals in more than 30 countries. The data includes usernames and clear text passwords, and the company believes they might be up for sale on underground hacker forums. Yeah,
let me just check.
That's normal. That happens. This is why your company makes you change your password every 90 days, by the way. Alexander Collin. Collinin? It's C-A-L-I-N-I-N. Collinin? I don't know.
Yeah, that'll do.
I don't want to say the guy's name wrong, but I don't know how to say that. Head of the group's IB computer emergency response team says these account details have been collected over time by cybercriminals with the help of off-the-shelf malware strains such as the Pony and Azerut info stealers, but also the Qbot or Quarkbot, multipurpose Trojan. The crooks who deployed these malware strains collect vast amounts of data from a large number of infected users. He believes that the people behind these operations might filter and group the government accounts into a separate package to advertise and sell online. Collinin says Group IB shared the cache of compromised accounts with the CERT teams of the affected countries, so authorities could contact affected government agencies. According to Collinin, more than half of the accounts, 52%, belong to Italian government officials, followed by Saudi Arabian government accounts, which are about 22%, and Portugal government accounts, which is 5%. The compromised accounts are from a wide array of government agencies. They varied from accounts on local government sites to state-level agencies and official government portals. Some of the most high-profile accounts from which Group IB spotted the hackers selling access included official government portals for Poland, Romania, Switzerland, and Bulgaria. But the website also websites for state agencies like the Italian Ministry of Defense, Israel Defense Force, Ministry of Finance of Georgia, Norwegian Directorate of Immigration. Why don't we have any directorates? Why we always have divisions, and we need a directorate. That sounds awesome. Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Romania and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Italy. It is unclear if the hackers infected workstations of government employees or if they infect the personal computers of government employees and stole government login details from employees who logged into government work sites from home. Why not both? Colin pointed out that the accounts could allow attackers to access both commercial or state secrets accessible through those accounts. Furthermore, the accounts could be used for other reconnaissance operations or as the entry point inside a government agency's internal network from where hackers can execute other attacks such as cross-site scripting or SQL injections. That's true, actually. A lot of people think a login box so that only certain people can get inside is as good as fixing this shit on their intranets. You would actually be surprised how many internal company sites are just riddled with security holes because it's not publicly facing, so they don't think they have to rush to fix any of it. The scale and simplicity of government employees' data compromise shows that users, due to their carelessness or lack of reliable cyber defenses, fall victim to hackers. Okay, that sounds getting overplayed. Colin told ZDNet, cybercrime has no borders and affects private and public companies and ordinary citizens. Group IB's discovery comes after Agri spotted a group of online scammers using a custom list containing details of over 50,000 executives at companies across the world. Agri said the scammers were using this list to send spear phishing emails that were pushing a classic business email compromise scam. Of which there's a couple of different versions of that. Usually it comes down to, here's an invoice, pay us money. So, or phone. Yeah, Cycross has a really good point. Phone. They've been finding a lot of Android malware and even a little bit of iOS malware lately in the official app stores. So that's actually a really good point that it could be their phones. Because a lot of people, they may not do work from their phones, but they usually put their email on their phone. So, I know RU doesn't because, well, I mean, he kind of does. Well, I was going to say your work email is your personal email, so that doesn't really matter. Madman, do you get your work email on your phone? Probably not without going through a pretty hefty app, I would assume.
No, I haven't bothered to do all the security crap necessary. Yeah. And my job doesn't necessarily require it. So I'm like, no, I'll check my email when I get to work. Because if they need me to do something off the clock, I would have to get to one of our machines to actually do anything.
Sounds like they're calling you now.
Yes.
Are you interested in setting up email over your phone, Madman? Wondering who that extra listener is. All right, let's keep going.
All righty. Next article is from Gizmodo and is a follow-up to the article we did in October, I want to say, about the Super Micro motherboards with the hidden microcontrollers.
Yeah, there was a bit of controversy whether that story was real or not.
Well, we kind of went back and forth with it on the show. It's like, well, I suppose it's possible, but...
I mean, if it's true, they don't really want to say it's true.
Yeah.
Because that underwrites the confidence of a lot of stuff. So... in between these two articles, one has come out saying it's true, one's come out saying it's not true. And there's been, smaller attempts to try and discuss it. And they've all said, well, it's not true, it can't be true. So, but this article here, it says same thing. It's not true, but, dude, being the eternal pessimist, I'm leaning towards this shit is real.
Well, what I'm wondering is because they found it by watching network traffic, right? So how do they know that these machines... I'm not going to doubt that the machines were infected. That shit happens all the time. I'm just wondering how they know it came from a microcontroller embedded on the mainboard, manipulating the kernel in memory. I'm not saying you can't do that because you can. It's been, there have been proof of concepts of people doing that. But it's usually in a very controlled system. But they were talking, in the original article, was mostly talking about appliance servers. So I guess they would know the software that was going to run on them. I don't know. It's implausible. It is implausible. I'll give you that. But it's not impossible.
Yeah, time will tell.
Yeah. So anyway, Supermicro has found no evidence of malicious microchips on its motherboards, according to a statement by the company that released two... by the company that was released to company's customers today. So this is coming from Supermicro, who it's in their best interest to say, nope, total bullshit, not real.
Yeah, that's why I'm sort of on the fence still.
Yeah. The audit of Supermicro Hardware comes on the heels of a scandalous report that Chinese spies had allegedly inserted secret microchips on motherboards that were used in servers operated by tech giants like Apple and government agencies like the CIA. The bizarre report, published by Bloomberg Business Week this past October, after a year-long investigation, alleged that Chinese spies were able to spy on sensitive American servers, but the article was met with immediate and aggressive pushback by the companies involved. Apple and Amazon both issued extremely strong denials, and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security said that it had no reason to doubt the statements made by Apple and Amazon. The companies have also demanded a retraction of the Bloomberg story, which has not happened. Reuters reports that the analysis of Supermicro's hardware was conducted by Nardello and Company and covered both old motherboards and those that are fresh off the assembly line. Supermicro is also reportedly reviewing its legal options, though it's not immediately clear what that means and whether the tech company will sue Bloomberg over the story. The entire saga has left many in the tech world scratching their heads, as Bloomberg Businessweek isn't known for playing fast and loose with the facts. But if you go back and read the original report from October, it doesn't mention words about who and what is involved. So how could this report, which appears to cite numerous unnamed experts in both the tech industry and the national security apparatus, be so wrong about everything? We still don't have an answer for any of that, but they've reached out to Supermicro for more information about what they found during its audit, and they will update the article. And they have posted the full statement from Supermicro, which is on their website. Wrongly alleged that bad actors had inserted malicious chips or other hardware onto our products during the manufacturing process. Because the security and integrity of our products is our highest priority, we undertook an investigation into assessments, blah, 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 blah. We test our products at every step of the manufacturing process. We test every layer of every board we manufacture throughout. We require Supermicro employees to be on site with our assembly contractors, where we conduct multiple inspections, including automated optical, visual, electrical, and functional tests. So they have a full QA process, is what they're saying.
Expect it to.
So here's what I would. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's what I'm thinking. It might be real, but it might not be very widespread. So if you think about it, this kind of thing. Inserting that kind of a microchip into a mainboard, right, would be difficult, especially to make sure that it would do anything in a reasonable period of time, because if that system doesn't run the exact operating system you're expecting, one of two things is going to happen. Either that microcontroller is going to be smart enough to realize, oh, you're not running the right system for me to attack and do nothing, in which case, who cares, it's doing nothing. Or two, it's going to try anyways and fuck up that system, and that'll be the most unstable computer you've ever seen. Which might immediately give away that there's something wrong with it, right? Which would, if nothing else, get the hardware chucked. But so if they were really doing this, it would be on an extremely limited and targeted basis. It'd be like, we know that this server is going to be deployed in an Amazon data center, and it's going to have something on it that we care about. So let's get this on here and risk it being discovered. Right. But we know it's going to be running this application and this software, so we could actually put the micro on there to do the memory manipulation. Because that's the rub, is you have to know what's going to run on that computer for that microcontroller to do that. And the size of that microcontroller, which, don't get me wrong, there are microcontrollers that small. There really are. They're expensive as hell. But like,
you're trying to pwn a country's resource.
I mean,
of course, you're going to put the money in.
You have to know exactly what's going to run, but a microcontroller that size does not have much processing power. It really doesn't. I mean, it's not even going to have the same power level as like an Arduino, right?
Yeah.
So, and those are little 8-bit AVRs. They don't have that much. Okay, they have more processing power than you'd think. They run 3D printers, for God's sake, but. They don't have a lot of processing power when it comes to examining a memory stream and inserting things. If it's not exactly what's expecting, it's going to bomb out and it's probably going to make that machine unstable. So again, I don't think it's impossible, but I think if it actually happened, it's on such a limited basis that you could track down the individual machines and just bend them.
Yeah.
So
I'll leave the door open on that one and see if we hear any more. Thanks to you.
Yeah, we might. Let's Yeah, I think we're going to hit an hour for the... Well, 55 minutes. We're at 55 minutes, so... Yeah, we'll be closer to the hour than we usually are. Let's...
Go Dojo next, isn't it?
Ah, fuck! I hit too many buttons.
Ha!
All right, got two things for us tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a really fun little write-up from Gokberk Yalaki's blog, which I probably said that name wrong too. Gokberk, Gokberk, and then his last name is Yaltirakli. I'm sorry, I don't know how to twist my tongue that way. Somebody give me a recording of how to say that name, I'll say it. But right now, I'm like, Gokberk? Okay. This is actually a really cool write-up. So, he's talking about how he recently took an annual leave and decided to visit a friend during the holidays, and he stayed during a hotel for a few days. And the hotel charged for their Wi-Fi. And they would be very generous and give 20 minutes if you... You have 20 minutes of free Wi-Fi, and then they want you to pay for it, right, on this particular hotel. He doesn't name the hotel, but I'm sure you can figure it out. And this is probably applicable to other systems like this where you get so long for free.
Yeah.
So what he did was he was on a Linux machine. And actually, I suppose this probably would have worked on a Mac too, but I'm pretty sure this was on a Linux machine. He installed a little program called Mac Changer, which is a little utility that re-registers your whatever network device with a different MAC address. And it's random. So he then wrote a script every 20 minutes, shut down his network interface, generate a new MAC address, bring it back up, connect to the Wi-Fi, and then use a Selenium script to go on the Wi-Fi portal and click the accept button. So that every 20 minutes, his machine was taking like half a second and re-registering the Wi-Fi link so he would have a fairly consistent connection.
Genius.
I love it. And
he's
got a nice write-up explaining exactly why it works and how it works and what it does. So, yeah, it's cool. And they need an email address, so it's literally entering. If you look at the script here, it generates a random number between 99,999 and zero, and then it registers the Gmail address, and then it fills in the thing with the Gmail address, test the random number at gmail.com, and then the name John Doe.
Quality.
Yeah. So, and as quick as this runs, I mean, for normal web browsing and stuff, you probably wouldn't even notice it popping, doing that in the background unless your browser is Selenium happens to pop the browser up. But, it's hilarious. I love it. And it's a classic. It's a nice little quickie write-up, and it explains exactly what it's doing because it's all a Python script. So, yeah, excellent to look at if you want an idea of how to manipulate your system to get around shit like, a free Wi-Fi link that only lasts for 20 minutes. And as long as you're doing something that's a little bit tolerant of your MAC address and connection dropping out every 20 minutes and getting a fresh one, like to say watching videos online or just web browsing and basic email. I mean, as long as if you're doing something that requires a consistent connection, it'll be kind of obnoxious, like Skype calls, TeamSpeak, remote desktop, things like that. Or gaming, it'd probably be obnoxious. But if you're just reading online or watching videos, it'd probably be fine. So, yeah, it's cool. And the last thing I have for tonight is kind of dumb, but kind of fun. It is a write-up on the opensource.com website of how to have a fireplace in your Linux command line terminal. So it's an ASCII art fire. It's a part of the AA lib package. There's one called AA fire. And he's got a nice little write-up in there to... how to install it and how to run it, so you have a little fireplace going in your terminal. So, you want to add a cozy little fireplace to your desktop. Here's how to do it. Is it dumb? Yes. Is it fun? Yes.
It's awesome.
So, anyways, though, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're We claim we're always working on it. We might actually get some work done on it this year, or next year anyways. Pure Decking every Thursday, which will resume in January. And the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit are the general haunts. Are you? Future news, closing thoughts.
I really have anything. Just hope everyone enjoys himself, takes it easy on the roads, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Come back for next year for a whole another year of shit show shenanigans.
Madman!
God, this year's been fucking rough.
Madman's been kidnapped by Sasquatch. His microphone's muted. I'm assuming he's not able to come and give us a future news.
He's renegotiating his telephone long distance. Oh, God, let's hope next year's a little fucking easier on the old brain space.
Yeah.
This one's been a rough one.
So, of course, you know, Decking's going on hiatus for the holidays, so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Try not to die. Try not to have alcohol poisoning. If somebody gives you a drone for Christmas, fly it into somebody's house who you don't like. I mean,
throat punching grandma for being politically correct.
There you go. Good. There you go. Actually, you know how Amazon has some fantastic fake reviews on it?
Yeah.
I saw the best one. I was actually looking at drone stuff. And on an old Phantom 3, somebody said, will this drone be able to fly my infant around? And somebody had answered it, yes. But please use common sense when flying your infant. Don't fly them over lakes and highways. And you should probably make sure the infant is wearing a helmet when flying it with the drone.
That is epic.
It's just like, I mean, I'm not doing it justice. It's just, it's not quite on the level of the 50-gallon drum of lube or the Harbro gummy bears. But
it's up there.
It was up there. It's caused me to burst out laughing when I should have been writing Python scripts at work. So, anyways. Yes, I was doing my Christmas shopping instead of writing, authentication system automations. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. I was stalling to see if Madman was going to come back and do future news, but I think he's probably stuck on the phone, either listening to a member of his family explain their, chronic health issues, or he's been called by work and being asked to explain the $5,265 charge labeled, $7.99 all you can eat buffet. So
gonna need you to come in on Saturday.
Yeah, if you go ahead and come in on Sunday too, that'd be great. But that's all we got. So I think we're gonna hit the Pac-Man sound and the game over sound, and I guess in this case close out the year.
See you next year, everybody.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.